The House in the Pines is a new psychological thriller from Anna Reyes. We follow Maya, a young woman who only has hazy memories about the most traumatic moment in her life, witnessing the mysterious death of her best friend. Maya's desperation to hide from and eventually fight for long-buried answers feels real and urgent, thanks to Reyes's knack for imbuing the book's plot with her own deeply personal experiences with withdrawal and searching for a real sense of home. The book does take place in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Anna was 11 and wrote about a creepy house in the Berkshires. That house makes a return visit in the new novel. It's already been chosen as Reese Witherspoon's first novel to be book pick of the year, and it's a pleasure to welcome Anna Reyes to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Really nice to have you on the show. Congratulations on the Reese Witherspoon Book Club pick. Congratulations on the new novel. What brought you to want to write about Pittsfield, Massachusetts, especially considering, from my understanding, you don't live there currently?
I don't live there currently, but I lived there for a few years when I was a kid. As you mentioned, when I was 11, I spent a lot of time at the Berkshire Athenaeum. So I know the area really well. My grandfather, William Carey, was a doctor in Dalton, and he lived in Pittsfield. And my mom and her siblings grew up in Pittsfield. So I've grown up going there for the holidays and just spending a lot of time there. Even when I didn't live there, I had very fond memories of Pittsfield. And so I was driven to write about it. And I also feel like it's a very atmospheric and very beautiful place.
Yeah.
So it felt like a natural setting for this story.
What was it about the house?
That's hard to explain. I think growing up being a huge lover of fairy tales, there's often that cottage in the woods, or you have the, you know, Hansel and Gretel type figure running through the forest trying to get away from some witch or monster. So I think the house was just a very evocative setting for this type of novel. And something about it just really captured my interest, not only at 11, but again, in my early 30s when I sat down to write this novel.
The sitting down to write this novel part, bring us there of what brought you to this particular genre, what brought you to this particular subject.
The genre was actually, I kind of arrived at that more slowly. The first draft of this was a little bit more like magical realism. It kind of lacked that thriller quality, but that was something that I developed over the course of several drafts. I grew up reading Christopher Pike and R.L. Stein, and then later Stephen King, and you know, a lot of different thriller and horror writers. So that's always been my favorite genre, but somehow I wasn't sure I knew how to do that kind of story. So it took a lot of revising and, you know, receiving feedback to sort of craft this kind of story. And there's definitely, you know, a series of tools that I kind of learned and developed, thriller writing tropes, in order to get it to where it is today.
Tell us about Maya. Maya lives in Boston with a boyfriend, is kicking a secret addiction. Tell us a little bit about Maya.
Maya is 25 when we meet her. And like you said, she is kicking an addiction to the Klonopin that helped her sleep after losing her best friend tragically when she was a teenager. She kind of never got over that trauma. So when we meet Maya, she's trying to move on, but she never really confronted the trauma of losing her best friend in the way that it happened. So she's been secretly nursing this sleeping pill addiction while trying to have a healthy relationship with her boyfriend. But of course, it's really hard to have a relationship with someone when you're hiding not just your addiction, but also the trauma that kind of led to it. And not just from him, but also from herself to a certain extent. When we meet her, she doesn't really understand what happened to her friend when she was a teenager. So there's a lot for her to confront before she's able to kind of move on from that.
Talk a little bit about the addiction. I mentioned this, alluded to this in the introduction, but you mine your own story here. What was it about that addiction and even in writing about it that may have helped you in the process?
I wrote about the book. When I wrote about this, I was actually dealing with that myself. I had been taking Klonopin to sleep, not to quote from a trauma, but because I've always had insomnia. And I wasn't warned that it was as addictive as it is, or that it was addictive at all. So I was taking it for several years before I moved to a new city, got a new doctor who refused to refill the prescription because he said, and, you know, or she said probably rightly, that I shouldn't be taking it for as long as I had.
Yeah.
And yet there wasn't any kind of weaning off period. She just kind of said, you're quitting, that's it, you're done. And I went through a withdrawal syndrome. And it was around that time that I began to write the book. So, you know, not having written a book before, I was kind of drawing a lot from my own experience. And because I was dealing with extreme insomnia and other aspects of withdrawal, I found it really helpful to write about it. I found it really necessary to write about it because, you know, that was my experience and it was sort of at the front of my mind. So writing about it really helped me process the experience. And as I recovered from withdrawal and began to move on, I found that the withdrawal was actually a really good character trait for an unreliable narrator, because there's something very disorienting about going through withdrawal and about not sleeping for so long. So I found that it kind of naturally tied up with this character that I was creating, who is unreliable in her memories of what happened, unreliable in her own understanding of what happened. So it kind of lined up really well. But initially, it was more of a coping mechanism.
Mm. I was prescribed Klonopin a long time ago and for panic and anxiety and depression. And one of the things that fascinates me is, and I still take it, but one of the things that fascinates me about it is if you forget to take it, let's say you normally take it at 10 o'clock at night, by 3 in the morning, it's as if your heart has left your body. And then is in a jail cell, just shaking the bar, saying, let me out, let me out, let me out, or let me in, let me in, let me in. And then you're shot for 2 days. And that's sort of the wake up call I got that, oh, this is a very powerful, a very powerful drug that, oh, you should probably, you know, make sure that you take as directed. So I can't imagine that for a prolonged period of time without being weaned off of it.
Yeah. I really like that metaphor of your heart is like trying to get out of your chest. I think that's a really good way to put it. There is this sense of wanting to jump out of your skin. Like it's just so, there's so much anxiety. And then when that's prolonged, it can become very disorienting where, you know, the doctor's telling me, you don't need to be weaned off of it. You know, this is just not something I'm going to, you know, she kind of treated me a little bit as if I was a criminal trying to get this from her.
Yeah.
So it was very disorienting because I began to think, what if it is me? I didn't really know that Klonopin withdrawal until I started looking it up online and reading about it and talking to other people. I don't think I had any idea of what it was going to be like. And yeah, it was really harrowing. Just the anxiety, the insomnia, and then the self-questioning, you know, just a lot of physical symptoms too that, that caught me off guard, you know, just the muscle aches, the kind of sweating and jitteriness. I really hope that anybody who takes that will take from my experience that you really should wean yourself. If you have to go off of it, it should be done slowly. It should be tapered. And that's what should have happened with me. But I kind of had to learn that the hard way.
Because as you mentioned, you wake up and you say, oh, I'm in a swimming pool. Oh, no, this is my bed. I'm just sweating. I'm apparently melting,
is what's
exactly happening. So I can't imagine then going through that and writing at the same time, of being creative and being able to navigate just, you know, a doorknob, much less writing.
Yeah, well, it was tough. It was, in a lot of ways, the writing was actually helpful to me because I was able to sort of make it objective. Once it was happening to my character and not to me, I was kind of able to look at her with some compassion and some level of, okay, this is something that's going to pass for her. So it was actually incredibly helpful for me to write about it. There were parts where it was more confessional and less story driven just because I needed to get it out. So that took a while to kind of shape my first draft into something that, well, into what it is today. So it was helpful to be creative, but I won't say that it was easy or that it came out great that first time when it was more of a survival mechanism.
So linking it back to the novel, this makes Maya a very unreliable narrator because it everything is very hazy. Everything is very complicated because she doesn't know what's real, and she doesn't know what's the result of paranoia or a result of the withdrawal.
Right. Yes, it makes her very unreliable. And I thought that was, as I mentioned, writing a thriller, I found that that was really helpful in crafting a character for a thriller. I think we see that a lot in this type of book where there's a narrator who doesn't really, you can't really trust them, and they can't even trust themselves. So the clonopin addiction tied in really neatly with that.
A lot of the book does have to do with memory or faulty memories. You seem to be fascinated by that, of how memories shape us.
Absolutely. I think that, like you said, memory shapes us. It shapes our understanding of ourselves. And if you think about the stories you were told growing up about your family, it kind of shapes your understanding of your family and your role in that family. So the idea of an unreliable narrator is really chilling to me, this idea that, they can't quite remember what happened, and so we can't quite trust their judgment, because I think we all have that experience to some extent. I know for me, there are things, and I think probably most people, where I remember something that happened when I was young, and then other people are like, well, no, that's not how it was, or you're remembering that wrong. Just little things, like little moments in time, that it's very clear that we all have our own experiences and our own memories, especially from when you were young. So there's something very chilling to me about that. And this book kind of brings that to the next level, where what if it wasn't just a small detail of your birthday party, but something really, life or death stakes that you can't remember. To me, that was very, very, very eerie. And so I kind of wanted to make that a big part of the story.
Anna Reyes's new novel is The House in the Pines. When you look at this, there's much in this story about the dark side of nostalgia. What brought you to that place? And I never realized how great that sort of fits into the thriller genre.
I think the idea of home becomes a very important theme in that. And the dark side of nostalgia sort of ties into this idea of home as a place that we all sort of have these memories of a place, whether it was our home or some other place, maybe our grandparents' home, where we felt completely safe and warm and kind of surrounded by love. And so the dark side of nostalgia for me is this idea that also tying into memory, that you can't really go back to that place because people grow older, places change. There's always going to be your memory versus the reality as it exists now. And that ended up emerging as a really important theme in this book, this idea that the home you remember isn't necessarily one you can go back to. So there's this sort of bittersweet aspect to it that I personally find very haunting.
In The Haunting, I also, there is an ancient story that weaves its way throughout the novel. Tell us about how you came to that.
The Hymn of the Pearl, the poem that you're speaking of, that ends up being an important part of the story thematically, but also as part of the story, it's her father, that poem was important to her father. So it sort of helps the main character understand her own predicament when she reads this story that he was retelling in his book. But for me, I came across that poem while I was writing the book, and I found it very touching. It's also about the idea of home and about the main character's longing for their lost home. And to me, there was something just so moving about that, especially at that time in my life. And it turned out to be sort of the key to the whole theme for me. It became very important to the story. So I wove it in there, and I feel like it really talks a lot about the main point of the book. Or the main theme, I should say.
Is there something good? And I'm not playing armchair psychiatrist, I promise. But I'm just curious. is there something interesting to you about the book and these things that have been tinged by your life in certain ways take place in the book on the East Coast, and you live on the West Coast?
Hmm. You know, I didn't think about that. I think that's definitely possible. I'm actually planning a move back to the East Coast, so
there
I don't know what that.
That's because you want a sequel. That's why.
Yes. That would be ideal.
Want to write about this again. Well, I assume it's exciting when you find out you're going to be a Reese Book Club selection.
Yes, that was very exciting.
And you can't tell anyone, and yet there it is.
Yeah, I found out in advance, and my editor sent me an email, set up a Zoom call with me. I didn't know what the call was going to be about, so I get on there with her and my agent, and when they told me, my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't, I just couldn't believe. I was like, I still don't really know how it happened, but it was, and then having to keep it secret was probably one of the hardest parts of this whole thing, because I was so excited. I wanted to tell everybody, but, you know, they were like, you know, Reese Witherspoon makes her announcement the day of, and she's the one who tells, you know, the world. So I couldn't take that away from her, obviously. So I managed to keep it quiet.
Well, the book is very, very entertaining and is very powerful and very eerie and really a lot of fun to read. It's The House in the Pines. It is published by Dutton. And Arias, I wish you all the luck in the world. I thank you very much for being with us, and good things ahead.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and I really appreciate this interview. This was really great.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, Anna Reyes is the author of The House in the Pines. The book is published by Dutton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.